This is Warbird Radio Live.
Well, good evening, everybody. Matt Jolly here with you for the 7th of November. 8 o'clock on the East Coast and well about 4 a.m. out here. Broadcasting to you live tonight from our studios here in Southwest Asia. Happy to be here. We have lots of great stories coming to you from this area here in the coming days and weeks. Trying to work out some of the details and getting those stories to you, but we're happy to be here. I have to tell you, we had a bit of a cultural experience this weekend. Got to go out into the sand dunes here in the desert. Some very high-powered SUVs. We went literally over 100 miles an hour over some of these sand dunes, up and down, all around. Had tea at sunset, and then our way was made literally under the light of the moon, the full moon, to our campsite where we stayed in Bedouin tents and right along the sea. Had a great time. Really, really fantastic experience. And yes, I may have ridden a camel. Pictures of that, well, we'll leave that on. Awkward, a little, to say the least, for somebody from a small town in Texas to ride a camel. But had a great time. Want to throw a special thanks out to the Berlin Airlift Historical Foundation. The C-97 made its way from Floyd Bennett Field all the way to Reading, PA. Congratulations to Tim Chope and the entire group out there. We'll have to have them on the show and hear all the nitty-gritty once they get things figured out. By the way, I believe Russ Dry from the Mid-Atlantic Air Museum has said that will be a big featured aircraft at this year's World War II weekend, the last flying C-97. So make sure you get out there and see that. We turn our attention tonight to an aircraft that has served now for over 60 years, and it's the longest continuously manufactured warbird ever. I'm talking about the C-130 Hercules. Here to tell us all about it now is Lockheed Martin's very own, by the way, former wing commander, retired colonel, Larry Gologoli, joins us now. Good evening, Larry. Thanks for being here.
Well, Matt, as you said, I had the great fortune to fly the aircraft for nearly 30 years, and I started out in the E-models, and that's about where the bulk of my time was, although I did have the opportunity to fly A models up in Rhode Island for a short period of time and then transition to the brand new J models in 2001 and flew those until 2012. I think the real big attraction for me is the versatility of the aircraft and all the missions that it can do. When you look at day in and day out having a mission, whether it be responding to humanitarian relief efforts, responding to conflicts throughout the world, and everything in between, search and rescue missions, refueling missions, forest fires, everything that this airplane can do, it's never a dull moment, and it seems like you're always going to work each day with a purpose, and that's what the airplane does for you.
I think that's great. We have a couple of questions here. This one is from Joe. Joe writes in, and he said he wanted to know when the Blue Angels were going to get the J model for Fat Albert. And I, that brings up a good point. A lot of services use this aircraft, including not only the Air Force and air forces around the world, but the Navy and the Marine Corps. And specifically, they use it. It's part of the Blue Angels, which is a great legacy in that. Do you know when they're getting the J model, Larry?
Yes, well, it's funny that he brings that up, because the Marine Corps is transitioning all of their aircraft, all of their current C-130s, to the brand new Js. So they, if they want to keep the mission in the Marine Corps' hands of flying Fat Albert for the Blue Angels, it's only logical that would transition to a J model as well. Obviously, the priority on the brand new aircraft is going to those frontline operational units, but the Marine Corps currently investigating using some of the British aircraft. The Brits have a few aircraft that are the shorter aircraft that they no longer have a need for, and the Marines are considering getting one of those aircraft and turning that into a J model Fat Albert.
Wow, that'd be that's some good news there for the air show fans. You're no stranger to the business either, Larry, former chairman there, if I believe right, at ICAS, a Sword of Excellence winner, a recipient yourself of that great honor, and do a fine air show up there. So you understand the tie, and I think that's where a lot of people first see this this aircraft as is at an air show. But let's talk mission just a little bit. You know, we're over here in the Southwest Asia region right now, and there's a lot of C-130s buzzing around. 60 years of continuous production on this aircraft, the longest serving or longest continuously produced warbird ever at this point. What are some of the missions that we're seeing right here, right now, so to speak, in the current war?
Well, you know, if you you can look at the various scenarios. If you look at, say, Syrian operations right now, you have gunships that are very active in the area out of the Special Operations Command. You have what I call the slick aircraft, the basic combat delivery aircraft that are used extensively in the theater for both normal air-land resupply, you know, point-to-point resupply, but also doing an extensive amount of airdrop operations in that region, again, showing the versatility of the aircraft. We have refueling operations over in that neighborhood, predominantly of helicopters, as you know, the C-130 is capable of refueling everything in the inventory up to the F-35 aircraft, and the speed range, that's the beauty of the design of the C-130, it can slow down to between 105 and 125 knots to refuel helicopters, and it can be from 180 knots up to 255 knots to refuel the fighters and the tilt rotor aircraft. So just that versatility makes it the go-to aircraft in all the theaters around the world, as well as when you throw in the humanitarian relief operations that we've had recently, particularly with Hurricane Maria coming through and having such a devastating effect down in Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands.
Now let's talk about that just a little bit, because I know Lockheed is rolling out an all-new civilian model of the C-130, and I believe that there were some advanced missions flown from some humanitarian perspectives with that particular aircraft. Can you talk about that, Larry? Is that something you can bring up?
Yeah, absolutely, and you're absolutely right, Matt. What we are currently certifying the commercial variant of the J model as an LM-100J. It is in FAA certification. We've got two aircraft that have been produced and are going through the testing. And they will be delivered to our launch customer in 2018. But when the hurricane devastated Puerto Rico, Lockheed Martin has 141 personnel working there in Puerto Rico. And while the company was very, very generous in donating significant amounts of money to hurricane relief operations, both there and in the United States, we also felt we needed to go one step further for those people that were down there in that community. So we went to the FAA. The FAA gave us a waiver to fly the aircraft on a real-world mission, and we loaded up the aircraft with generators and water and batteries and all sorts of other supplies that the people in Puerto Rico had identified as their top needs. And we flew two missions down and back to Puerto Rico, just loaded to the gills with supplies, and a very, very rewarding mission for our test pilot crews that have been flying the airplane just on normal, mundane test operations. They get to be part of a real-world operation, and it did wonders for morale throughout the company that we were able to respond, and we certainly appreciate the FAA helping us out in that regard.
All right, Larry, I'm going to go back here to the questions that the listeners have been writing in. This is you want to do the rapid fire thing. I know we're running short on time here today with you, but let's do this. What has more power, the legacy model with JATO or the new J?
Well, I can't give you the engineering number, but the pilot in me tells you that the J can can match or exceed any performance of the legacy airplanes with JATO.
But you don't have the cool factor. I mean, you got to have rockets, it seems like. That had to be so exhilarating just to hit those rockets and hold on for a few seconds.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do lack a little in the cool factor, but when you see that the size of the aircraft going up as steep as it can go up without those rockets, you can't help but be impressed.
Oh, I can't agree with you more. I mean, the watching the Rhode Island guys fly that thing and gals is really impressive during the demo, but I'm very serious about that. I mean, when that thing goes up, as you've said, you can overspeed it now, the landing gear, if you don't get the nose up fast enough. It's remarkable. The other question that came in here, this one's from Dex. He said, what's next for the C-130? What can you talk about and tell us that's coming down the pipe? Because I know there's got to be some cool stuff.
There absolutely is. And aside from the LM-100J that'll next year, we're constantly looking for improvements to the aircraft. One of the things we've been putting an awful lot of effort into that I think I'm convinced you'll see in the very near future is a laser on the C-130 gunship, putting a lot of effort into that. And the technology has increased significantly. So that'll be coming soon to a theater near you. And we're also working on a lot of fuel efficiency measures. We have a thing called microvanes, which are a small 10-inch guide vanes that are adhered to the back of the aircraft by the ramp and door to smooth out the airflow. Results in a 2.5% increase in fuel efficiency. And we're also looking at trying to use the rest of the extra space within the wing. There's some air space within the wing right now that we're trying to figure out how we can use that for extra gas to increase the range of the aircraft, as well as the loiter time. If you're a Coast Guard operating on a rescue mission, if you're a gunship loitering overhead, or if you're just a slick airplane trying to extend the legs of the missions and operations over in the Pacific, we think those will all be big improvements to the aircraft as we look down the road.
Well, Larry, we got to have you back on again to talk more about the C-130, the Hercules, but I do want to ask this in closing because you're the guy. You're the guy that goes out there when people want to call up, I guess it's like 1-800-LOCKHEED, and they place their order for a C-130. You're the guy that answers the phone. Tell me, how do you sell this thing against the competitors? Because in my opinion, there aren't very many competitors. Just looking around the table here, I mean, the C-130 has kind of held its position now for 60 years. So how do you approach that?
Well, Matt, you're absolutely right. And I think I look first at a beautiful airplane like the C-17, which when I was a youngster flying C-130s, they told me that a C-17 was going to replace a 130 and a C-141. Well, it did replace a 141, not so much with the 130s. The C-130 has such a specialized mission, and the basic design of the aircraft was so perfect for that mission that it really is tough to replace. When you look at having the four propeller-driven engines on the aircraft, well, the propellers are not susceptible to FOD nearly as much as the jet engines are. So that's enabled us to go into these short dirt strips, gravel strips, landing on grass, and all the other austere environments that we go into. The straight wing that the airplane has, while it may not look as sexy as a nice swept wing, it enables us to get to those slow speeds to refuel helicopters, slower speeds to airdrop into rugged terrain and austere environments, and then still hit the higher speeds when we're going to transit or when we're going to refuel faster movers such as the F-35. So the design was just perfect for the mission that it was intended for. And we have seen day in and day out that it's just hard to find something better.
I think that's well said. Larry Gologli, thanks for spending some time with us on this episode. Sure appreciate it. And I hope you'll come back and talk more with us about the C-130. It's such a great aircraft, and I always love to hear you. Thank you so much, Colonel, for coming on.
I appreciate the time, Matt.
This is Warbird Radio Live.
And my thanks to Larry Gologli for coming on the show tonight. You know, Vincent T. Hill, for those of you that don't know, he purchased the C-45 that my good friend Jim Daring owned, one of my childhood mentors. His wife was my high school guidance counselor, Marlene Daring, and Vincent T. Hill, a man that I have not yet had the privilege to meet in person. A lot of mutual friends have seen him fly. Great guy is joining us now because he purchased Jim's old C-45 and has it under a blended restoration, if you will. But my thanks to Vincent for coming on the show to tell us about it. By the way, if you want to see pictures of Vince's project before he began the restoration, we've provided a link in the show story to our original post of that aircraft back when Mr. Daring had it down in Ingleside. And really cool stuff to see the progress. You can follow along on Facebook, just in the Twin Beach group there, for lots of progress pictures. But nonetheless, Vincent, good evening, sir. Thanks for being here.
Well, I found the airplane. A friend of mine, which actually really didn't know at that time, had the airplane for sale to the widow. And the airplane, it was on Facebook. And so I decided to go down and take a look at it. And get down there and look the airplane over. I knew it needed a lot of work, but I was just finishing up with the T-28, so it was sort of, I guess I needed another project. So we, Aaron and I went down, looked at the airplane, and decided to make an offer. Worked with Marlena. She was very adamant that the airplane live and not be used for parts. And really, really wanted to make that happen. So we, Tim Wiebe and I and Aaron went down. We got the airplane running, changed all the hoses, that were just overdue and accessories. And the old thing fired right up, ran great, and flew it out of purpose. And on our way home, we decided to stop by another pretty nice Warbird guy there in Texas, and was having a conversation with him, and we were looking at the issues that this one had, and he says, I've got a really good airframe that between the two of them can make a really nice airplane. So I actually ended up with two pretty much before I got home.
That's the way it always goes.
Isn't
it? It's like, we had the best of intentions, and we start with two or three to make one. But so the widow you're talking about, Marlena Daring, was my high school guidance counselor. And a little backstory on this airplane: we had run a story on it with Warbird Radio for a year or two ago, and I've known about the airplane for years because I grew up around it. I mean, this is the airplane that that Jim Daring, her husband, who was an old CAF guy, bought. It was bought from a museum in a unique paint scheme, as you and I have discussed offline. But the really cool thing about this airplane is that it served a mission. I think it's kind of cool that it served a mission up until Jim parked it when he got sick, which was serving in the Coast Guard auxiliary. This thing flew up and down from the Rio Grande Valley all the way up, clear up toward Houston and back, patrolling the waters of the Rio Grande for drug interdiction and for stranded, folks in the boats or in the sailboats, whatever it may have been, off the coast. This thing still served a mission, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, and actually, when I got the airplane home, I obviously we looked inside it, but there was a lot of stuff that came along with the airplane. Marlena basically said anything that goes with the beach, you're welcome to. So we just sort of loaded all these boxes. The interesting thing is when we got it home and started going through, all this stuff, there was a lot of maps from doing those missions. There's a lot of all the marine radio stuff was still in the back. So, it's just really interesting. And the airplane itself, actually, Mr. Daring himself, I didn't get to meet him, unfortunately, but everyone that I talked to said he was a really interesting guy. We were both kind of the same. I'm a mechanic by trade. He was a mechanic by trade. He actually had a Skymaster. I had a Skymaster. So it was almost kind of like it was meant to be sort of a situation.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Unfortunately, yeah. And unfortunately, the airframe, it can be saved. It's just, and I probably will. I think I'll finish 619, which is actually going to be painted up in the same scheme as Jim's. And I told Marlena that I would put his name back on the airplane. That was part of our deal.
Well, that's pretty cool stuff.
His name,
He was quite a guy. Yep. Flew in harpoons for a while, if I remember correctly. Just a neat man all the way around, and very, very had a very recognizable voice. Is one thing I always remember about Jim. And, you know, I started turning wrenches on his Skymaster, which was a drug airplane, literally had been bought at an auction that he got it at. And one of my favorite stories is the first time he was flying it back, that he and Mrs. Darren, I believe, landed in a field. And they had a little fire, and they landed. And he always said the first sign of the fire was her in the back seat screaming. So they landed and were promptly surrounded, of course, by law enforcement, you know, because this thing had been, it was still on the books as a drug airplane, even though he had just bought it. But anyway, great, great stories from Jim Daring. And I just wish I had, you know, I wish I had all those interviews that we had been doing it long enough to get him on, because he was such an interesting guy. And, you know, he was an FAA guy. You'd go take your written test from Mr. Daring at his house. And at one time, yeah. I don't know how long he had this, but one of the cool things that he had in his garage was, courtesy of the CAF, he stored it, was the limousine, the big Lincoln limousine that FDR used to ride around in. So when you go to Mr. Daring's house, we'd always pull it out and get it running before the air shows and go ride around in FDR's old car. But what a guy. So your plan for this is to continue on, have it restored. And I'm guessing take it to air shows.
Yeah, I'm going to use the airplane for travel, just like he did. Like to take it to air shows, give free rides in it, just bring it back to life, you know.
Any chance we're going to see you fly like Matt Youngkin at all? I mean, you know, Matt's pretty good, but, you know, Vincent T. Hill could be the next big thing with Twin Beaches. You could actually fly through billboards with this thing, you know? I mean, come on. You could beat Matt to the punch.
I think Matt's got his own thing, and I don't think anyone will ever top that.
I don't either. My goodness.
But I'm going to keep the right side up.
Yeah.
Most of the time. So
Tell us about your T-28, though, too, before you mentioned your T-28, and I'll let you get back to your thought there, but tell us quickly just about your T-28. It's an A model with a three-bladed prop. Do you know its history or much of its history?
Yeah, so the A, when I was looking originally for a T-6, and I just sort of was afraid of the maintenance with the T-28, and like I was telling you, that the T-28, it does it is a lot more maintenance than a T-6. I really enjoy the airplane, but my T-28, I don't have a ton of history. The history that I do know is that it went to Mexico, and it served in the Mexican Air Force until it was retired there, and it traveled back and forth across the country at least three or four times before it was actually a whole piece. And the gentleman that I got the airplane from, super nice guys down by the New Orleans area, I ferried it home, and then we went to work on it. And with a lot of help of Jamie Trudeau and Trudeau Warbird, we're getting it back kind of where it ought to be, I think.
Well, that was my question, is if it was an old Mexican an airplane, because a lot of those A models went to Mexico. And a lot of them trained foreign service pilots right here in the United States, but through the Air Force. But what an incredible airplane. One of these days when we're sitting down and we finally get to meet at an air show, I'm going to tell you a great T-28A story that I think you'll learn. But I'm not ready to tell it on air just yet. I want to see if I can get the former instructor pilot to tell it, because it's a good one. It's one that should be enjoyed with Matt Youngkin and Jeff sitting around a campfire somewhere with the Shetterlys. I mean, that's the right scene for this story. So it we'll have to
perfect.
Yeah, we'll have to make sure that one gets in your storybook there. So I didn't mean to cut you off, Vincent, about the beach. We're running out of time here, but anything in closing here before we go, and also tell the folks at home how they can follow along with this project, because I think it's so cool.
Well, I'm just posting as we go on the Beach 18 AT-11 page on Facebook. So just as we make a little bit of progress, we'll post a picture here or there. And right now we're just in the middle of starting to redo it kind of from the inside out. and fixing any sheet metal damage that it has, which unfortunately it didn't have a lot of that. So, but we're getting pretty close. And I do have one story about Mr. Deering that I was told when I was there that I thought was super interesting, is that there was a picture in the FBO there of Mr. Deering in a harpoon, I believe it was, flying off right off the deck next to a Russian boat.
Yeah.
And I guess during the conflict, he was bugging this Russian ship, and one of the Russian guys took a picture of him. And somehow over the years, they met up, and that guy gave Jim the picture of him buzzing the Russian ship, which I just thought was really interesting.
Yeah, well, so. Knowing him the majority of my life, I could never confirm or deny him to do a good buzz job in an airplane. And I'll just leave that at that. Or tell stories about seeing giant, orange orbs in the air while on patrol in harpoons. I mean, I'm telling you, there's so much history that's been lost with these guys passing away just at such a rapid rate. And, that's what we always say around this place, is that these stories matter. And someday, Vincent, it's going to be you telling these stories. So thanks for coming on today and doing that. Hey, before you go, I always think this is cool because there's a lot of young folks that listen to our show. And, they all want to be in Warbirds, but they don't know the track record. You mentioned you're a mechanic. Give a quick plug for your business, because I think it's pretty cool stuff that you guys do.
Well, I've got a shop here in Kansas City. We maintain exotic cars, so Ferrari, Lamborghini, Maserati, a little bit of Porsche, and some vintage stuff, like early GT40s and stuff like that. I basically grew up in a really, really small town, and my grandfather was a mechanic, and somehow I got infatuated with the Italian cars, and so that's kind of what led me down this road, is just slowly plugging along until I had a business. And like you're talking about getting into Warbirds, it is really, really hard. And I'm not from an aviation family. I don't have any aviation history whatsoever. So it's been a long road for me just to get people, to talk to you. I think that's important. A lot of you guys out there that have Warbirds should reach out and talk to the younger people and get them involved. Put them in the airplane. That's all it takes. That one spark, somebody that enjoys this stuff. Because we're only here for so long, so we have to keep these things going.
We're just temporary caretakers. Something that I think is interesting, and you probably would agree with this, is that once you have your license, once you have your rating, and even if you don't, there are guys out there like Jim Harley that show up to the Collings Foundation tour as the tour coordinator, and when they finally stop their, they have all their ratings and everything. It is possible to do this if you want it bad enough, but my point being with you, as an owner-operator, you buckled down, you really fought hard, you built your business, and now you have the wherewithal and the means to take care of some of these aircraft and maintain them at the level that you want to. And I think that's really important. It doesn't matter what you do, just do something and do it really well and get out there and work hard. That's, to me, is the message that I hear in your voice, and that I think so many of these kids, sometimes they don't want to hear that, but if you're in your early 20s and you buckle down for a few years, it sure pays off in the long run, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And you got to sacrifice. I made a decision, a conscious decision, probably 10 years ago, that, this is the stuff that I wanted to focus on. Some people focus on, getting a big, humongous house. And that's okay. That's fine. But for me, this was more important. And so that's just kind of where I'm at. I enjoy the group. There's a lot of really good people that you meet doing this.
Well, look, I look forward to seeing this airplane back in the air. And one of these days, I want to go. I want to go up with you and see Mr. Deering's airplane go again. That's just going to be so awesome. We'll have to cover it here. We have a lot of ties to that personally. Yeah. So here at the station, me and a couple of the guys actually do some great stuff there with that aircraft. But Vincent T. Hill, thanks for coming on, and best of luck to you in the future with this project.
No problem. Great talking to you, and have a great one.
Well, again, my thanks to Larry Gologoli tonight for coming on, and of course to Vincent T. Hill, and to each and every one of you who have written in tonight. Next week, we have an all-new show planned for you that you're not going to want to miss. I hate to announce the guest just yet because we're working through some scheduling conflicts, But trust me, this thing is going to be awesome when we crack this one off. So please plan on joining us next Tuesday night for an all-new episode of Warbird Radio Live. Still to come tonight in our 2 hours of live programming for Tuesday night, Mike Hartman and Andy Hines return to the airwaves with an all-new Hartman and Hines show featuring this week Barnstormer, Bill Barber Award winner, innkeeper, aerobatic flight instructor, all-around great guy, aircraft dealer, Greg Kuntz is on the show tonight. And Greg is always a great time, so be sure and stay tuned for an all-new Hartman and Hines show right here on Warbird Radio. My thanks to each and every one of you, to all of our guests. And remember, folks, be sure and thank a veteran. I say that now more than ever because if you're over here with us, if you've ever had the privilege of coming over here, nothing would make you prouder than seeing your airmen and all of the coalition forces in action, helping to fight the good fight over here. And I'm here to tell you, you just can't help but be proud of them. So please, if you see one, be sure and tell them thank you. So long for now, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.